That is the first time you have ever heard that sound. A minute's worth of one of the smallest wildcats on the planet, the guinea, an animal that is number 10,000 in Joel Sartori's effort to photograph 15,000 rare and endangered species in the world's zoos and wildlife sanctuaries. Joel is 15 years into his photo arc project, and I'm just tickled to death to have him on the phone with me today for Lincoln Live. Joel, good to talk to you. Good to hear your voice.
Always a pleasure, Dale.
Yeah. How are you doing? This is the first time we've talked since the pandemic.
I know it. Well, it's the first time I've been grounded in a long time, about 15 years or so. First time I've been home, you know, extensively, but it's got its ups and downs, like it does for everybody, I would imagine.
Yeah.
We're just hanging in there.
You did manage to get the photograph and get that audio of the guinea before you were quarantined.
Yes, I did. That was actually shot in January at a place called Fauna Andina, a wildlife conservation center in Chile. It takes us a while to get to these animals, to process them, to keyword them, get them into Geographic's archive. And so, yeah, we just announced that was the 10,000th species. We announced that on Friday. And, so here we are, two-thirds done, 15 years, got another 10 years to go to get the last 5,000. We have to go a lot farther to get fewer. Of course, we're not going anywhere right now. But, we're seeing some light at the end of the tunnel, Dale, finally, you know.
Explain again, Joel, why it will take you 10 years to get 5,000.
Well, we got the low-hanging fruit already. A lot of zoos, especially in North America, you know, they have a lot of similar animals because they need to. Zoos are conservation centers, and they're breeding these animals, and they swap genetic material. They move animals around depending on their genetic qualities. And so we have a lot of the more common animals that you would see in zoos, the giraffes, the zebras, lions, rhinos, elephants. We have all those. And so now we need to, you know, go to the South Pacific to get this rare group of snails, or go to Indonesia for rare songbirds. You know, it's just, we have to go a lot farther to get fewer. We don't need African lions. We don't need to photograph African lions anymore or zebras anymore. When we go to a foreign zoo, we're going there to get some rare species of owl or frog, or even rare mice. And we do common species too, but it's just the world has about 2 million species described so far. Zoos, aquariums, wildlife rehabbers, conservation centers, they've got about 15,000 species in captivity. That's what we're going after, to show kind of a slice of what biodiversity looks like. So we're at 10,000 now. Another 5,000 should take us 10 to 15 years or so.
Joel started this project 15 years ago. The Photo Arc, One Man's Quest to Document the World's Animals, has been published, and Joel has other books connected to his effort. He's reintroducing it to us again to mark the milestone of his 10,000th photograph. JoelSartori.com is the place to go, not only to see some of your photographs and get the book, but you offer a signed copy only at that site, correct?
Right, that's right. People can get the book anywhere, you know, anywhere where books are sold, including Geographic. If they want a signed copy, they'd have to get it through our office here in Lincoln, but we ship anywhere in the world. We ship all around Lincoln, obviously. So just go to our website, joelsartori.com, and then go to the store, and you'll see all the different kinds of books. Happy to personalize them for people, too.
All right, joelsartori.com. I've noticed that people seem a little more friendly to each other, albeit more distant. We have that 6-foot requirement that we have to. I was curious whether you have observed at all whether humans are treating animals any better these days.
You know, let's start with the human to human first. I've just noticed in what little driving I've done around Lincoln, people are kinder, less of a rush. If two people get to an unmarked intersection, they'll often wave and smile and allow the other one to pass. Much more civil. I love that. You know, that's great. So I think that we all realize we're in this together, and most people are pretty thoughtful about that. In terms of animals, I mean, if you look at the news, you can see the skies are clearing over India. The skies are clearing in a lot of our big cities. You can actually, you know, L.A., you can actually see blue sky on the horizon. So it's hard on us. I know it's hard on us. We're a social animal. A lot of people are really hurting, both health-wise and economically. I get that. But it does take some of the pressure off nature. We're starting to see the natural world rebound. What I worry about, Dale, is when all the restrictions are lifted, will we just go right back out and do the same things? I mean, can't we be better than we were before? Can't we be kinder to each other and to nature? Can we quit hating on each other, and can we give nature a break? Really, the key to our own survival, at least in my opinion, from traveling around the world for 30 years now for Geographic, is that we have to save big blocks of habitat. Areas where we don't spray poisons, where we don't log all the forests, where we don't overfish. Big blocks of intact rainforest, big blocks of prairie, native prairie like we have here in Nebraska. Big blocks of habitat, because those regulate climate. They keep our climate stable. Without those rainforests in the Amazon and in Africa, equatorial Africa, those things regulate the amount of rainfall we get in the areas where we know how to grow crops. And we all know, if we're from here, what a delicate dance it is to pull off crops, unless you're irrigated. Most crops are dry land farms. And so we have to have good moisture through the winter. We have to have spring rains, an abatement of rains, and plenty of sun for the crop to grow, and then an abatement of rain again in the fall for harvest. Well, if we screw up the rainfall patterns, that is going to have dire consequences. The other thing is I would encourage people to plant a pollinator garden in their backyard. Mm-hmm. We've done so both here at our house and at our office. We put down bee balm and blue hyssop from Campbell's Nursery, and we plant coneflower, and we plant milkweed. We plant all these plants because we have to give insects, pollinating insects, a break. And, man, if you put it out, they'll come. They need that, and they'll come. We have to have pollinating insects like bees and butterflies to pollinate fruits and vegetables for us. We've got to have fruits and vegetables. So all these things that we can do, whether it's insulating our homes, whether it's maybe eating less meat, which is very energy and chemical intensive, maybe it's driving a smaller car, driving it less. It's insulating our homes, which really pays you money because it pays for itself quickly. Insulating our homes, throwing off less carbon to heat and cool our homes. These are all things that we can start doing right away. Reduce, reuse, recycle. What we buy, literally examine what types of products we're buying and why. These are good things that we can do, and they make you feel good, you know. You don't have to save the whole world. Maybe just your own backyard, you know?
That's where it starts. Don't get intimidated by, yeah, oh my gosh, what can I do about the rainforest? Or I have no control over the prairie. You can plant clover. You can plant clover. That's what my yard is clover, to try to attract as many bees as possible.
Sure.
And butterflies.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you can do it in your yards here in Lincoln. Joel Sartori joins me, joelsartori.com. Of the animals left on your list, Joel, of the 5,000 or so still there, which one are you looking forward to the most, or
you
which
know,
ones?
Next one, Dale. I know it's not a cop out either. I do care about the next one, whether it's an invertebrate or it's some mega creature somewhere. I care about the next one a lot. I'm a dog person myself, but I like photographing these small wild cats. They're very elusive. You hardly ever see them. Getting a guinea at Fauna Andina in Chile was a big deal for the 10,000th. And there's only three or four more wild cats that I need in terms of species. One's the Andean mountain cat. One's a Chinese mountain cat. One's a bay cat from Borneo. So these are very far flung. And I'm very excited about those. But I get just as excited about, I photographed a calico crayfish from Oak Lake here in Lincoln not long ago. Our staff biologist brought that by for me to photograph, and he put it right back where he found it when we were done. But I get excited about all of them. You know, I really do.
Joel, I get emotional when I think about the animals that are no longer here. I have a copy of a National Geographic in my desk drawer, and on the cover is, I believe it's in Africa. It's a rhino. I don't know if it's a white rhino or what rhino it is, but it's rare, and it's not doing well. And I have it turned cover down.
Yeah.
because I can't look at it every day. It makes me so sad that that animal's not around anymore. Mm. And there are animals in your book, Rare, for example. You have a rabbit, but one of the first photographs in your book, Rare, that rabbit no longer is around anymore.
Right, right. Well, Dale, I tell you, I know the picture. It's Amy Vitale's beautiful picture of a keeper at a conservancy in Kenya where they had the last three northern white rhinos. And that's a male that's dying named Sedan. He's the last male. There's two females, mother and daughter, in that same pen. They're the last of them. So I see what you mean. And it'd be easy to get morose. But what I do is instead of getting extremely sad about it, I think, okay, let's use this occasion to get more fired up. Let's try to do a better job.
Yeah.
Let's really, really try to play our A games and not let this happen over and over again. So I get more angry and inspired than anything.
Yeah.
I can't afford to get depressed. And also, you know, if you think about it too, Dale, most of the wildlife that we got here with, that we evolved with, is still there. Most of the plants and animals that we grew up with are still there and savable. But it really does come down to saving big blocks of habitat for ourselves, for the, to stabilize the climate. And we can do it, but we really have to start paying attention. We cannot just keep going and destroy everything and just think it's fine. I tell you, this is not an ad for Campbell's Nursery, but I tell you, I go there and I find some amazing plants. And last year, I found blue hyssop. And I don't know whether it's a cultivar or whether it's a true native, but these plants had seven of them. These bushes, they have blue flowers, and they had seven of them. And every insect in Lincoln was crawling around on these things. Lots of butterflies and bees. So I bought all seven and I planted them at our office. And I tell you, Dale, I counted 75 painted lady butterflies on these seven bushes at one time.
Do you know how to spell that plant? Do you know how to spell the name of the plant?
Yeah, I think it's H-Y-S-S-O-P, hyssop, blue hyssop. And this thing, I mean, I know that we had 20 different species of native bees on them. They were so full of insects that I couldn't weed around them until nighttime when the bees would go away. It was just incredible. And that made me feel so good. I mean, I see a lot of depressing stuff out there.
Yeah.
But when I come back home and I can look at these bushes that I planted in a very small space, they like full sun. I mean, they didn't require much water. They didn't require much anything. And they were blooming from May when I bought them, from May all the way into frost, into October, all the time. And they had insects on them all the time, all day long. It was great, and I thought, you know, I'm doing something here. This is a little thing that I'm doing. I also planted milkweed and bee balm and all these others. But I just thought, you know, anybody could do this. You could have one of these things in a bucket on your porch if you lived in an apartment, and you'd be helping out bees and butterflies. So that those are things you can do to keep your spirits up. Look, at the end of the day, we can't save the whole world individually. But at the end of the day, you really want to be able to look in the mirror and kind of smile, knowing that you did what you could, been kind to other people, as kind as you could be to nature, thoughtful in your consumer choices and how you live your life, helpful to other people. You know, just look at the work Scott Young's done with the food bank. How critically important is that? Mm-hmm. You know, I meet heroes all the time. People like you who care so deeply that you get emotional when you can't even look at the cover of Geographic. Environmental heroes, social heroes, people that are making the world a better place, that gets me all fired up. It really does.
I need to talk to you more often, man. That's just what I need to do to get me pepped up. Hey, we're out of time. We probably won't talk before your birthday next month, so happy birthday.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
I appreciate that, Dale.
Happy
birthday. Keep going, man. Keep going. Don't get depressed. Get fired up.
Nope. I think I might even go turn that National Geographic magazine over and just take a look at it.
There you go. And don't forget, there's a photo arc story in that issue, too.
Okay. Well, I'll go back and look at that.
Open it up. Dive in.
All right. JoelSartori.com. You can get a signed copy of Joel's books. You can take a look at the photographs, get all jazzed up like I do every time I talk to Joel. Be careful, Joel. Good talking to you.
All right. See you, Dale.
All right. Joel Sartori joining me on Lincoln Live.